Kobe Bryant off balance. Yeah. And Shaquille O'Neal is there. Bryant, touchdown FAU.
And Fulham are surely heading back to the Premier League.
The Denver Nuggets stand on top of the NBA world. The Philadelphia Eagles
What is up, everybody? Welcome in to another edition of Cheers from the Press Box. I am your host, Brennan Tassif, joined as always by the magic manager himself, Mr. Joe Dorville.
What's up, Joe? How's it going? I'm in a second place.
If you can tell.
I warned the world last week.
By the tones of our voice. We are recording this Monday night. Currently, the Miami Dolphins are beating the Rams. 43 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Rams down by 8 points. We're going to see what happens there. But if you're new to the program, a quick rundown of the show. As I like to say, we're going to talk about all the major things happening around major sports leagues. So NFL, we'll talk NCAA football. We'll get into the quick hits where we will quickly talk about Fulham coming through in the soccer corner. And then Joe and I are going to do a tandem walk-off. We do this sometimes when we have a topic we want to talk about. There might be some disagreements, but we'll see what happens. Talking about rookie scale quarterbacks in the NFL, that's for the end of the show, though. So let's start this week off the same way we do every week. Joe!
Ready to return the opening kickoff. Perfect way to kick off. Here we go.
All right, here we go. We're going to start with the time, actually. I don't have the time. Joe, do you have the time?
I think it's half past. Game of the
Game of the week. All right, we're talking game of the week, and this is an interesting game of the week. I know a lot of you listening are thinking, oh my gosh, Washington Pittsburgh, that has to be the game of the week, 1 point, blah blah. No, we're gonna go with the Houston Texans at home and their god-awful alternates going up against the Detroit Lions. I think the clock struck 12 for Mr. Jared Goff, MVP candidate.
Well, yes, but on the Detroit Lions, it's still at 11:59.
Yeah, they end up winning this game. Goff threw 5 interceptions.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Count them. And he looked. It was weird because everyone thought this was going to be the game in Green Bay that Goff would play. Like the weather, his small hands. They haven't played outside yet. Blah blah blah. And then they ended up playing really well. And then in Houston, and Houston's not a bad team. I'm not going to say they're world beaters this year. They haven't looked like the same team as last year. But Goff just looked uncomfortable. He was getting pass rush. Shoot, Will Anderson was eating his lunch.
I don't think Will Anderson played. Am I crazy?
Oh, he didn't. I just said that because he's their main pass rusher, but
yeah, that's the thing. Like back to my, you know, my buddy's parlay,
Dolphins won.
So in my buddy's parlay, I picked Detroit and I got extra points. Cause I was like, well, Anderson's not going to be there. So-and-so's not going to be, I was like, there's no way Detroit doesn't just walk through this game. And I'm watching the game, and they didn't get a sack on Goff, but you're right. Like, they were in his face constantly. And I was like, what is going on?
Yeah, it was a lot. They had 5 total QB hits. I don't see the pressure rate on here, but just from watching the game, I was like, every play, he, like, looked like he had – it was very reminiscent of Trevor Lawrence where it's like, gotta go, gotta get this ball out. And I even texted this to you, but I'll tell the listeners, there was a point where I was like, even the passes he's completing look like they're – because he was dirting a lot of throws, which just means he was throwing them so short that they would skip on the ground. And even when he was completing passes, like St. Brown was like diving for them. And I'm like, where are you putting this ball, my guy?
This goes back to the playoff game last year against the San Francisco 49ers where on the final play of the game, he threw the ball into the ground. So if Trevor Lawrence misses high, Jared Goff misses low. Yeah. And that comes down to standing in the pocket and execution. Again, this week I saw – they didn't win the game, but I saw Kirk Cousins. Again, my example for Jared Goff because – probably his best comp, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
Standing in the pocket, knowing pressure's coming, and delivering a strike. Goff gets a little nervous and will
little happy feet
short. Will you know, pull up on that and not give a full follow through.
Yeah, because he has that same long release that Tebow had that a lot of people were criticizing. Trevor, even when he first came into the league, they have this like really long, drawn out release, and it's not as bad as like the Tebow one, but it's still to the point where if you're getting pressured, it's noticeable. Mm-hmm. And CJ Stroud started throwing, so they didn't score in the second half, Houston, and it looked weird because they looked like world beaters in the first half. You're like like you said, most people were like, "Oh, this Detroit Lions team is just going to walk through this," and we were all looking at each other like, what the fuck is going on after the first half? Because the Lions were down and it looked like they could not run the ball. And I'm a huge proponent of
to start the
David
game
Montgomery on this team. They could not run the ball. And then they started having to do like these trick sweeps and jet sweeps and all this kind of stuff. And you're like, what is happening? And it's bubble screens and then just regular screens. And then they started to get some movement, but it was weird. For the Lions, a lot of their big plays were from basically things that like Jared couldn't screw up, which, you know, shout out to Ben Johnson being like, all right, if you're going to dirt every throw, then we'll run a screen where you have to like lob the ball up. And it ended up working out for them in the end. Houston looked like a different team in the second half, though. What did you see the play where the lineman like bumped into Stroud and then tried to take the ball from him?
No, I missed that one.
So at one point during, I'm sure it's on X or Twitter or whatever, but at one point, Stroud's getting pressured and bumps into his lineman, the offensive line. I think it was the right tackle. And the tackle, you can see in the replay, is like trying to, like yelling, like, I got this, like trying to pull the ball out of, because they kind of got sandwiched and then defenders were like coming in.
Yeah.
And come to find out that the tackle was like a quarterback in high school and wanted him to give him the ball so he could, like, he can move. So he was like, oh, just give me the ball. But then, like, he ends up pulling the ball out, but CJ thinks it's like a defender. So he's like trying to hold on to it with all his might. So it just pops up into the air. And then Detroit recovers. And you're like, what the fuck is happening?
That's crazy.
So it was like the second half was like a comedy of errors for Houston. I blame the uniforms. It was, I couldn't believe Detroit won.
Well, CJ did end up having two interceptions in that second half.
And a fumble.
Fumble, yeah, but it says it was recovered by the tackle.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, because they were like kicking it, and I was like, just pick it up, Detroit, just fall on it. I kept screaming, just fall on the ball. Yeah, the lineman ended up jumping on it, but it was just a weird, it's one of those plays that we talk about, like one of those, I know you don't really believe in momentum, but it's one of those plays where you're like, oh, this game is over for them.
Yeah, I think the biggest indication that this game was over for them was the fact that they tried to sand this game away. They got a big lead. They were up 23-7 at the half. And they kept trying to run Joe Mixon, and they kept getting nothing.
Joe Mixon at one point went to the sideline and was slamming his helmet around and screaming at the offensive lineman.
They could not get nothing. 25 carries, 46 yards, less than 2 yards a carry. Like, they had to then resort to throwing when you really don't want to throw because you're up at this point. And it just led to bad plays. And shout out to Detroit's defense, hanging in there, keeping them in this game, not allowing Houston to score in that second half, which gave the offense enough time to stick around to come back and get that win. Because honestly, after the fourth interception, I was like, I mean, you might as well just pull Goff now, but it's
that's
like,
what I thought. I thought they were going to pull him.
I guess they're still close enough where they can, like, you know, give it a go, and boom, there they go.
Yeah, it was a weird game too, because to your point, the defense like kept them in it to the point where like every time they got the ball back, because in my head, I'm like, they have to pull Jared. Like, he's in his own head. He's seeing ghosts. Like, they got to take him out. But then I was like, well, they're only down by like 10 points. Like, it's not that insurmountable. And then they scored. And I was like, well, now he's got to stay in. And then he threw another. At one point, Dan Campbell, they came out of halftime, and Dan Campbell, as he's saying, we need to get a takeaway, they picked the ball.
They got an interception.
Yeah. And then immediately, three plays later, Goff throws a pick. And you're like, what the fuck is happening? Yeah. It was a weird game.
It was a bizarro game for sure. to say the least.
All right. Speaking of Bizarro.
Ooh.
The Pittsburgh Steelers go into Washington and beat the Seawords, the Commies, the Commanders by 1 point.
Russell Commies Wilson is in now DC.
Undefeated as the starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. The defense kept them in this game for a lot of it, but it was a young man, a rookie defensive tackle for the Washington Commanders. Fourth and three. And they put the Mike Tomlin puts out the offense, and in your head you're thinking, oh, he's just going to try to hard count him. They're in no man's land, like kind of too far to kick, but too close to punt. So he's like, all right, maybe he'll run a play. Maybe, but this, you know, Commander's defense has been playing well. And then the rookie defensive tackle just jumped offside on the first cadence, on the first sound of the cadence.
I think it was Jazon Newton.
Yeah, that sounds right.
95. He jumped immediately. And I was just like, oh my God.
The Steelers win the game.
I was like,
you win the game.
It's never. You see that 1,000 times, and every time you're like, they're not going to jump. They're not going to do anything. Like, and I'm always like, look, offense, they're not going to jump. They're not going to get fooled. They're kind of not ready. You should just run a play because they think you're not going to run a play, and then you could catch him off guard. And instantly, he just ready. Boom, he just ran it. And I was like, oh my gosh, it worked. The one time
on the slow-mo replay, you just see him throwing his hands to his head going, oh my God, what did I do?
Yeah, no, it was devastating to say the least. But I do want to point out two things. As me and you talked about earlier, before the mics cut on, I watched Halloween Town with the lady.
Underrated. Great film.
Great film. Phenomenal film. But I want you to know Calabar is not the strongest warlock. It's Mike Tomlin. For him to keep pulling out victory after victory, for this Steelers team to have a quarterback change in the middle of the season and still be 7-2, like, this guy is making magic right now. Russ was having his worst game since becoming a starter to start this game, and then pulled it out. A couple spectacular passes. Not even going to front to George Pickens. George Pickens had one amazing body-changing, contorting catch in the end zone. I texted my buddies immediately after that. I was like, I think George Pickens is kind of amazing, guys.
It's weird because he's in this lane of, like, he's definitely a top 10 receiver, but because of some of his antics, like he had a play where he just like walked off the field in the middle of the play. And it's like,
he had a play where he started, like, it was Russ's interception. He didn't chase down the guy who got an interception. He just
depleted a defense.
He just went and like destroyed somebody else.
Yeah. So it's weird because you think he would be known because at least once, excuse me, I'd say like once every 2 weeks he has these plays where you go, did you guys see that?
Yeah.
And then, but then he does these other things where you're like, yeah, I'm not going
to. This is not a serious guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I love you, but you're not serious people.
But and then you had the final touchdown, which was very funny to me because Mike Williams wasn't getting any love on the Jets. Actually got thrown under the bus a time or two by Aaron Rodgers. Comes here, one play, one catch, 32 yards, game-winning touchdown.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I even forgot this. I was listening to one of my fantasy podcasts, and like, yeah, he was a first-round pick for the Chargers.
Yeah,
Clemson. And it wasn't that long ago. Yeah, but he was just hurt all the time.
Couldn't stay healthy. When he was healthy, he'd have a good season, but couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting situation now because Washington had that Hail Mary a couple weeks ago, and everyone's like, oh, it's the team of destiny. But then they started like this game, I think it was the game right after. But didn't they lose? They've lost a couple out of their last few, and it's just turning into one of these
three now.
Yeah. And it's almost turning into like, did we overrate?
Spaces in between the losses. It was first game of the season to the Bucks, then week 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 to the Ravens. not going to fault you for losing it's because to the Ravens.
I'm sorry. It's because so they win that Hail Mary game against the Bears, and then they have a super close game with the Giants. That's what it was. And
they had a super close game with the Giants in the beginning of the season too, where remember they didn't score a touchdown. They just kicked like six field goals.
Yeah, 21-18. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it is one of those things where sometimes you're like, wait, is this the team that we thought they were? I think
the biggest question is, who are the Bengals?
Yeah.
Because a win against the Bengals, is that a good win for your team? Or are we looking at the Bengals as a bad team? Because that's really, and they handled the Cards, and the Cards,
according
are
to my fantasy statistics, leading the AFC. A good team.
The Cards are leading the NFC West right now. But that game against the Bengals, yeah, Jesus Christ.
The Chase thing, yeah, I told you about that.
Yeah, I just realized what you were saying. Because outside of that, I mean, they got a win against the Browns, the Panthers, the Bears, and two times against the Giants. So it's how do we rate the Bengals, and how do you rate the Cards?
See, I think the Cards are and it's interesting because the Cardinals have already gone through their hardest point in their schedule. A lot of people are heavy on the Cards now. And I guess like their strength of schedule to start the season for the first 10 games was like 85, like 0.85, whatever that means. And like to finish out the season, it's like 0.36. And so everyone's like, oh, they have an easy road the rest of the way. And so I think the Cards are a good, bad team. Mm. And I think the Commanders might be like an okay, good team, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Well, or like, they're not going to win the Super Bowl, but...
Yeah, no. They're going to have the Eagles twice, the Cowboys twice. The Cowboys twice could be wins both times because Dak is gone. Titans, Saints, Falcons.
I mean, I would have at least predicted them to, at the very least, even if the Cowboys were healthy, to split that series. And now with Dak gone and all the dysfunction happening. So I don't know. I really only
see them losing two more games, potentially losing two more games with how they've been playing, and that's the two Eagles games.
12-5, yeah.
Like outside of the two Eagles games, the Falcons could probably take one, but they shouldn't lose to the Saints. They shouldn't lose to the Titans. And they shouldn't lose to the Cowboys.
I don't want this Pittsburgh team to be good, but it looks like they're going to do it again.
Dude, I told you, death, taxes, Mike Tomlin will not go under 500. It's written in the stars.
It's just good, man.
It is written in the stars.
Speaking of in the stars, Christian McCaffrey came back this week. Juwan Jennings, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey. What more could you ask for? San Francisco goes into Tampa Bay.
Ricky Pearsall.
I'm starting to think that San Francisco might be a dysfunctional team, but they're also a good team, especially when a couple of these pieces are healthy.
What led you to that Debo Samuel's trying to knock out his
the long snapper.
Long snapper and kicker in one fell swoop?
The kicker, Jake Moody, missed three field goals. He's coming back from injury. They're in a super tight game against Tampa Bay. It's in Tampa, and Moody misses three field goals, which is a big deal.
Damn, he was 3 of 6.
Yeah, when he comes off the sideline after missing the third field goal, Debo Samuel had something to say about it. Now, any person who's ever played center or long snapper or anything, you protect, like the center always protects their quarterback, the long snapper always protects the place kicker. So Debo Samuel comes off the sideline like chirping at Moody, and then the long snapper, who is a joke on the team, gets in like up in Debo's face, and he's like, they're both yelling at each other. So Debo swings on the long snapper, like hits him in the throat, and then slides off, and then hits Jake Moody in the helmet.
He gets a follow through of knocking up Jake Moody upside the head. It was insane.
And then Jake Moody hits the game winner. So you're kind of like, oh, this is awkward. Baker Mayfield is.
And then,
you know,
Nick Bosa's on that team. So just.
Yeah. It's a mess. Baker Mayfield is the Sam Darnold story I wanted. He played out of his mind in this game. At one point, Nick Bosa was like trying to tackle him, and he like stiff armed him and ran for like 10 yards and then lobbed it on like a 4th and 7. It was insane.
Funny tweet from my boy Jeremy Tache. He said, I think with that play, Baker Mayfield becomes the de facto leader of white dudes for Harris. Just holding that bay.
I saw another one where it was like them talking, and it's Baker going, or it's Bosa being, or no, Baker, like it's like a screen, like a cartoon kind of, and Baker's like, hey, you wore that MAGA hat, right? And Bosa's like, yeah, go MAGA. And Baker's like, yeah, MAGA. And Bosa's like, I'm not going to tackle you. I was like, that's so fucking stupid. Like Baker, they were in this game. And I feel bad for Tampa Bay because I root for them. I want Baker to do well. But they just keep getting these, like, losses.
Unfortunate losses. Though.
Yeah, they're in a lot of these games. And it's just one of those things where you're like, oh, man. Like,
you got to imagine they would be doing better if Godwin and Evans were there.
Yeah, and that's another big thing. Losing Godwin, maybe for his career, and then Evans should be back next week. But like Baker Mayfield is still making things happen to an extent with like the pieces in front of him. And it's like
Baker Mayfield, and let's not, the defense is doing their part as well.
Yeah. The run defense is something to be desired, but they are making plays when they have to. I mean, they've got real guys on that team, so we'll see what happens. I hope Tampa Bay makes the playoffs. The only problem is I don't think they're going to be in it for the wild card for the NFC, and the Falcons have already taken a pretty big lead in the NFC South. By beating them.
I don't know.
They're up like two.
They beat them twice, but they just lost to the Saints for no good reason.
Yeah, so it's going to be a murky finish to the season for that.
The NFC South is shaping up to be the NFC South we imagine.
Yeah, it just took us a little while.
It just took a little while to get there.
Yeah, after week two when we're like the Saints. When the Saints are destroying people, we're like, oh, is the NFC South going to be good?
The Saints won two games. Tampa won two games. The Falcons won. It was like, whoa. And now it's like, oh, okay. Everything we thought. Everything will come to pass.
One more round.
All right, one more round. The Philadelphia Eagles, the Philadelphia Eagles clobber the Dallas Cowboys, even though they try to blind us in the sun. It was very funny. Before, you know, people started talking about this, I said in our Discord, I was like, the Eagles are a completely different team when out of the sun. Everything inside the view of the sun is horrible. Once they get out into the shade, they're automatic. And
come on. Have you ever seen 300? So we'll fight in the shade.
Everybody thought I was crazy. And then the Cowboys have their best opportunity to get a touchdown. And Debo loses the ball in the sun. And then he starts pointing to his eyes.
He
and I'm like,
pointed at his eyes.
I'm like, thank you. I'm not crazy here. But no, the Eagles outside of that, a couple of turnovers that were unfortunate on our end.
Well, there was that one Hurts turnover where he literally,
I don't think he saw Micah Parsons back. Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't even see Micah Parsons.
Like, yeah, Micah Parsons just emerged from the sunlight, and was able to get a forced fumble there. But he had the interception that was honestly not even his fault. Trayvon Diggs made a hell of a recovery to get back and snag that out of the air. But you don't want to see those. You don't want those to be consistent things. The defense was able to get five turnovers of their own. So, you know, plus three in the turnover ratio. That's pretty dang good. We were playing a beat-up Dallas Cowboys team. Took care of business. Did what we had to do. Fourth quarter, the starters were able to relax. Got a game Thursday against the Commandos, against the Commies. So hopefully go into that game fully prepared, fully healthy, and ready to go. Also, I hate the NFL schedule that you can both be playing on Thursday, but one team plays later than the other team and has to travel. It's like, if you know we're going to play Thursday, put us on at the same time slot. What are we doing here? Now I feel like somebody has an advantage.
One more round.
All right, my Jacksonville Jaguars played at home in brand new shell white helmets, which I think they made some poor uniform choices. I don't think you go black with the white helmet, but anyway, I digress. Played against the juggernaut that is Minnesota. I've been a big proponent of Sam Darnold on this podcast, even got into an argument with Joe via text about Sam Darnold to the point where Joe goes, I don't understand. He's going against your team. You don't even root for his team. Like, why are you so passionate about this? Everyone knows it's because I
fighting for him like he's your first begotten son.
It's because I got into an argument with one of these chefs. He's the executive chef at Midtown, but he was training with us. And he was like, oh, the Jags, because we're talking football. And he goes, they suck. And you know my stance on when people say that. And I was just like, that's like saying, oh, because you're a corporate chef, you suck. It's like, no, everyone who works here is good. Like, everyone who plays in the NFL is good. And I just, like, went off. And then I was like, probably shouldn't talk to the executive chef that way. But I felt the same way about Sam Darnold, where he finally had the system was right. The team wasn't in dysfunction. The ownership, the management wasn't all in chaos, and he could finally play. And he looked so good in the first couple of games. And Joe had been steadfast and like, I don't think he's that guy. And I'm like, yes, he is. Yeah. And then he just played like garbage.
Played like dog doo-doo.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, maybe he's not that guy. And it was one of those things where so the Jags lose 12-7. So it was one of those things where we stayed in the game and Mac Jones actually didn't look terrible to the point where Joe baiting me said, hey, is Mac Jones the guy?
The first drive, he looked really good. I was like, whoa.
I mean, he looked really good, but so in the fourth quarter, this was something that I found interesting. So he had a fumble.
You guys could not capitalize off any of the interceptions.
No. So we ended up getting three picks. And still couldn't make a play. And then at one point, the 7 points we got was Mac Jones scored a touchdown. He ran it in. And but it was interesting because I was watching Red Zone and also had the game cast going for the game. And it's like we had the ball. There's like 2 minutes left or a minute 35 or something. And Mac Jones bombs it to the end zone. It gets picked. But then there's like the app isn't like updating. And I'm like, what is going on? So come to find out, Mac Jones bombs the ball down the field. It gets picked, but the defender like stepped out of bounds. So it didn't count. The very next play bombs it again to Brian Thomas Jr. The same defender picked it off this time in the end zone.
Hilarious.
So he took two deep shots. And these are like 50-yard passes. He took two deep shots. Both times they got picked off by the same defender. And that's when I was just like, oh, there's no way we can win this game. And of course, we end up losing very similarly on a penalty in the waning seconds. It's, you know, it's fourth and four, or excuse me, it's third and four. We stop them. A scuffle breaks out. Trayvon Walker gets flagged. No. We have no timeouts left. There's like 30 something seconds left. And we're like, all right, well, they're going to have to punt because they're deep in their own territory. And Trayvon Walker gets into like a scuffle with another guy, punches at him. Even though the guy had started it, he punches at him. And it looks like he's trying to punch the ball out of the running back, I think it was. And then everyone like grabs him because he's trying to punch the ball out. So then it looks like he's punching the players and they throw a 15-yard penalty and the game's over. But it is one of those things where it's like the same thing we were talking about earlier with Detroit. Like and I tell Joe this all the time, our defense isn't bad, but if you're going to be on the field for that long, you're just going to get exhausted.
Yeah.
And like so this is now game six that we have lost by 5 points or less. And I've said it before and I'll say it again right now. This is a culture situation. This is a coaching situation. This is a gotta win the big one. So it does fall on the quarterback as well when Trevor's healthy. But yeah, they're going to clean house. We're going to be okay. Minnesota did not look good.
You want to know fun stat? Three quarterbacks in the NFL right now have 10 interceptions. Sorry. Or more, but they all have exactly 10. Geno Smith. Jordan Love, who hasn't played all the games, by the way, and Sam Darnold.
Better or worse that he hasn't played all the games and has 10 picks?
It's worse.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And Jared Goff is at 9. A guy had a 5-interception game and hasn't cracked 10. It's pretty good by him, but Sam Darnold, just saying.
Yeah.
Just
he forces so much.
Was forcing it so much. And look, as a proud Justin Jefferson owner in fantasy, I appreciate it. But I also have Aaron Jones in every one of my leagues. And every one of those picks, Aaron Jones was leaking out of the backfield wide open. And I'm like, just dump it off, man.
It almost came to fruition. So at one point, because we were going back and forth, and I was like, oh, well, he trusts that Justin Jefferson's going to make a play. And you're like, well, it's insane that he's throwing to him in blanket coverage. Like, why would you throw to someone who's double and triple covered? And then in the fourth quarter, when they were driving before Sam Darnold, I think, threw another pick or they had to punt it or something, he bombs it to JJ in the end zone. And I was like, I'm going to be right. I'm going to be fucking right. And then he overthrew him. And I was like, oh, like the fan in me was like, thank God. But the person who wants to be right in me was like, if he would have caught that, I could have been like, see, I told you.
Like, man. So yeah. Doo-doo-doo.
One more row.
Another team. So I think I'm on the wrong side of this. A lot of people hate Kansas City and are annoyed with Kansas City. I don't have a hate for them yet.
I do for Travis Kelce, but that's a personal thing.
Yeah, it's a personal thing. We don't have to get into that. I get it, but I don't care.
I have nothing against Patrick. I'm actually very happy for him because I remember when he got
I'm drafted. Actually not happy for him because his mom sucks really? And his wife sucks.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
I just remember when he got drafted. I remember because you know how much I love the draft.
I wish he was a little more vocal. Like,
I was like, who? So I think it's cool he's had all the success because I remember they took him and I was like, who is this guy? I've never even really heard of him.
That's the thing. I think it's cool that they've had the success. I think it's cool. I think it's good how they've been able to, not good because, you know, my team fell at the hands of them. But I think it's very prudent of how they've been able to manage a franchise while having, you know, the best player and doing all the things that I preach. Like, if you got a player and you know he's the guy, sign him as soon as you can. They yeah. signed him 10 years, 40 mil. Yeah, everybody had to sign their quarterback for more money in less time. So every contract is worse than his. So you're able to get what is the best quarterback on not the punitive contract where you can't fill out your team. So they're able to keep Travis there longer than people probably would think. You move off of Tyreek, you get other pieces, you keep Chris Jones. They've been making very sound decisions, not falling in love with certain players and identifying the players that they need, like getting rid of LeGarius Sneed, but keeping, the second corner. I can't remember his name now. But yeah, so I'm not annoyed with them. I don't hate them, but I will say I felt so bad yesterday.
Yeah. We have a lot of Denver fans in our life.
I felt so bad because like what I tell you, I wanted to send that at like halftime and
Troy
I was going to
Troy
McDuffie. Thank you. I wanted to send that message at halftime, like only in the NFL can the Denver Broncos get throttled by the Ravens and then be beating the Chiefs at halftime. And I was like, you know what? I'm better than that. I know better than that. Let me
don't
keep this in. Let me just keep this to myself. And then we're getting, and Denver makes a couple great plays down in the fourth quarter, get them in field goal range.
Bo Nix looked like he knew what he was doing.
Every time they get into the 2-minute offense, I will say he like, once you simplify it, he looks good every time. It's the yeah. other 48, 58 minutes of the game, 54 minutes of the game. No, 56 minutes of the game. Is that right now?
Yeah that's
2
right.
minutes of 2-minute warning. Yeah, it's the other 56 minutes of the game where he's kind of like flustered at times. And
I think his age has a lot to do with it. I think he knows what to do. But to your yeah. point, like when they start throwing a bunch of shit at him, he's like, wait,
yeah,
what?
Yeah. When the kitchen sink's coming and it's like you got to process everything, it's like, ah. But once it's like, we got to move quick, we got to get
just
the ball out,
football,
hurry
yeah.
up offense. Like that's what you
he
guys did.
Like 60 games in college.
That's what you guys did against the Eagles last week.
Yeah.
Like once it got into
yeah,
2-minute offense,
Trevor.
Or
yeah,
once
you
get into
Trevor
hurry
Trevor,
up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
once
like
you don't let Press Taylor call the plays anymore. Yeah.
But yeah, as the Broncos are lined up for the field goal, I send the message like, man, only the NFL can. The Broncos do this and then blocked field goal. And I instantly I was like, I'm sorry,
as
guys.
They were getting ready to set it up. They literally called the timeout and the team was running on and you sent that text.
I just immediately got blocked. I was like, I'm sorry. That's on me, guys. My bad.
I couldn't get on the Discord fast enough to be like, you jinxed it. Like right as I hit send, you were like, my bad.
I was like, damn, yo. Oh, that was unfortunate.
One more round.
Baltimore at Cincinnati. Cincinnati at Baltimore. So This game was close. Ja'Marr Chase put on a clinic. He had 243 yards and three touchdowns, more yards than that. When I checked it on my fantasy thing, he was at 243, and I was like, I'm done looking at this. 63 points in our league, because if you get a touchdown for more than 40 yards, you get an extra 4 points. So each touchdown he got on that end was worth 10 instead of 6. But but Baltimore owns Cincinnati. Baltimore came back and won. God, that's so many yards. Baltimore came back and won. It was pretty heartbreaking for Cincinnati because you didn't see Burrow on the sideline like with his head in his hands, like upset.
That last drive should have ended like 3 times, and they got bailed out by the ref. That catch wasn't a catch.
Speaking of, did you see the Tampa Bay game?
There was a pass interference. No. There was a rough in the passer that was not a rough in the passer. My Lord.
We forgot to mention this, but in the Tampa Bay game, their final drive when Tampa was going down and ended up tying up the game before Jake Moody won, they had three 15-yard penalties on San Francisco.
San Francisco was imploding. That was weird.
But anyway, back to this game. It was interesting because so they score the touchdown and you're like, oh, they're going to kick it and tie the game. And of course, Zach Taylor's like, nah, hold my beer. And goes for two.
Now, smart move in that decision.
100%.
I have an issue with the procedural aspect of what happened next.
Well, so then what ends up happening, and I saw a lot of this on like the replays, and you can always find a penalty if you screenshot something because there's so many things happening. But like, the defender did hit Joe Burrow in the face as he threw the ball. And everyone's like, oh, you can't hit a quarterback in the face. That should have been a penalty. And then a lot of people were screaming for the pass interference in the end zone. And I was just like,
not the guy the ball was thrown at.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, that's, you lost, man. Like, it was smart to go for it, but you got.
My thing is, it's very, and that is not what I had the issue with. I'll tell you what I had the issue with after I addressed that part of it. It's always funny. You can tell how people are leaning when they want to blame the refs, because it's like, oh, the refs should have called that. But then you also have a segment of people, if the refs called that, it's like, the refs want Joe Burrow to win. It's like,
do you know, you can't win for losing. Times I've been watching a Jags
game. Let them play. Just let them
and
play.
And jumped up off my couch and been like, these fucking refs are getting paid or something. And then if we get a call, I'm like, good call. Good that's job. A smart. Good I don't job. I don't see the hold. I don't see the hold, but that's a smart call. The refs saw the hold. It's just so the ultimate climax of this was Utah lost. College football.
And the AD. But then
the athletic director came out, hijacked the head coach's press conference.
Said, losing this game for like 22 years. We've been getting railroaded.
He said, I was very happy with joining the Big 12, but after that officiating performance, we got
railroaded again.
He's like, I'm not very happy joining the Big 12. And it's like,
call the commissioner tomorrow.
That is such a loser mentality, dude. Like, oh, man. You lost, man. What was your issue with the procedural stuff?
My issue was Zach Taylor. By the way, the Ravens are out of timeouts. They use all their timeouts for their game-winning drive. There's still some beer in there. And I just wrapped up the paper. Damn it. The Bengals, they get the touchdown.
The Bears, the Browns, the Bengals.
They get the touchdown. They line up for two.
Michael, Tyler, Brian.
The Bengals get the touchdown. They line up for two. They call a timeout. What are you doing? Yeah. Why would you call a timeout? Now you allow them to see your setup, and now you're allowing them to, one, like, be able to like relax, recover, get some water, and then get the right personnel in to combat what you're doing. Like,
this
you
want to
catch them off guard.
Yeah. This is the whole Belichick in the Super Bowl against Seattle. When everyone's like, you have to call a timeout here, they're on the 2-yard line. And Belichick's like, I'm not going to call a timeout. Let's see what happens.
No, you got to let it play. You got them on the ropes.
Yeah. Go for it.
You don't let the bell ring. You got them on the ropes.
Yeah,
go for the
knockout.
Agree.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I was like, it's the dumbest thing ever.
even worst case scenario, you don't have the right play in. You still have Jamar Chase, Joe Burrow. Like, they'll figure it out.
Yeah. And you got like 25 seconds to get the play in. Like, you just scored a touchdown. Everything's settling down. Let's get the play call in. All right. If not, we're going to draw something up in the dirt. Like, why stop? Like, you just kill your favorite thing. You kill momentum. You allowed everybody to get their wits about them. And then if you're relying on the referees, you're a clown.
Yeah, and I'm going to be 100% honest. Baltimore is more reputation now than anything with that defense. I mean,
that defense is Swiss cheese right now.
Yeah, it's been well documented. It's like the worst passing defense in the NFL. At least it was until week 9. I didn't check the updated stats, but they were 32nd out of 32nd in passing defense.
Well, I will say the problem is they've played Joe Burrow twice this season, and Joe Burrow has 9 touchdowns on them.
Yeah, he's...
and thrown for like 900 yards.
That team doesn't... It's weird because the Bengals team doesn't seem like it was any good. Remember the start of the year when we were like, oh, it's always a slow start, and they were like 2-6? Whatever it was.
Don't say we always say. I said that's going to come to bite you, all right? I never gave them a pass on that.
No, I'm not saying we gave them a pass, but when they started so poorly, the conversation was, well, they always start slow. And I remember by like week 4, I was like, they're 1-3. This is not like a, oh, they always start slow situation. This is like, they're going to miss the fucking playoffs.
That is what I said. And everybody tried to gaslight me and say, oh, they just start slow. They'll figure it out. And I'm like, no, you can't just always figure it out, guys.
Yeah, they're 2-6.
Burrow has 820 yards against the Ravens, 9 touchdowns, 1 interception, and it's 0-2.
That's crazy.
I think Lamar Jackson wins the MVP just off that stat alone. Like, he won the 2 games where Burrow did that because he played significant. He played slightly better than Burrow.
It is interesting talking about the MVP. People have to be listening to this podcast because as soon as I made the joke about Jalen winning it for Washington, and we both laughed, Jaden, I'm sorry, Daniels. We both laughed and we're like, oh, a rookie would never win the MVP. Like, that's crazy.
There were some talks about it.
Literally the next week, everyone's like, could Jaden Daniels win the MVP? And I was like, these motherfuckers are taking my take.
I mean, we saw Nance take my take right from the Discord. That was insane.
As you texted it.
I said in the Discord, I'm like, yo, man, Cooper DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell, honestly, they both should probably be up for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Nance, 5 seconds later, Quinyon Mitchell, you know, he's been guarding a lot of number ones. He might be up for Defensive Rookie of the Year. And I'm like, wait a second.
I think we've talked about it here, but did you know that the Broncos also have a white corner?
Do they?
Yeah, Morris.
I did know that. Did he also go to Iowa, is my question.
Yes, yes.
Okay. I think I did know this.
But it's like, he went to one of those Midwest schools, Big Ten schools. But I found that interesting when Cooper did it. It was like, because we joked about it on here. It was like a bit, because everyone's like, oh, they're going to switch him to safety. And Cooper's like, no, I'm not playing safety. I play corner.
Yeah, and Cooper was like, I'll play whatever they want. And the Eagles were like, we're going to play you at corner.
I know what he said, but what he felt was, no, I play corner. But I just thought that was so funny because I was watching that Denver game and then the Morris kid made a play and they went, oh, the corner Morris. And I was like, wait, is that a white corner?
Like, is he light skinned? He's got a black dad? What's going on here?
Moss. I'm sorry. I keep saying Morris. Moss.
Oh, come
Riley
on.
Moss, who went to Iowa.
Yes, Riley Moss. Yes, yes. I know Riley Moss. But yeah, that's
playing funny. Corner too, baby. Come on. Let's go. We're taking
they
it back.
To him. Iowa. We're DEI.
Taking it back.
DEI for the cornerback position. Iowa. Doing it all on their own.
Here we go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, time for everyone's favorite game around the country. This is Who's In, Who's Out, Who's Up, Who's Down with your host, Joe Dorville.
Ah, Brennan, who's up, who's down, who's in, who's out? The college football rankings came out last week, but games happen and they don't come out until Thursday evening. So we ride with the AP. So who's in, who's out, who's up, who's down? Which one do you want first?
Let's go with who's in, who's out after some tough losses by top 25 teams this week.
Who's in, who's out? We got Iowa State is out after suffering their second loss in 2 weeks. They have hit the road, Jack. They are out of the top 25.
Who'd they lose to?
Don't know. I clicked the thing, and I don't think they played another top 25 team.
Ah, so damn it.
Don't know who they lost to. Pittsburgh also took an L, and they find themselves on the outside looking in. And last but not least, Vandy took an L. And so now they took an L to South Carolina. So they are on the outside looking in at the other schools in the top 25. Who's in this week? We got Tulane. You know, we Green love Wave. Them. The leaders in Green Waves, folks. They are back in the top 25. Number one in our hearts. Mizzou has clawed their way back in after beating Oklahoma. And South Carolina find themselves at 23 after beating Vandy. As far as who's up, who's down, only a couple teams gone down this week. So we're going to start from the bottom to the top. LSU, after getting shellacked by Alabama, they have found themselves sitting now at number 21. They fell seven spots to get to number 21. SMU, unfortunately, didn't lose a game, didn't play a game, but somebody had to go up, apparently, so they had to go down. They went down one spot to number 14. Boise State didn't lose a game, but some other teams had some major wins. So even though they beat Nevada by 7 points, they fell one spot. Coming in at number 12, the University of Miami lost to Georgia Tech. Very upsetting. Very nauseating.
Just real quick for the listeners, you texted me, Georgia, we're going to lose or whatever you texted me.
Oh, yeah. And like in the second quarter.
Yeah, there was like still like a half to play. I was like, what are you all talking
right.
about?
Dude? No. The writing was on the wall. This is Mario's Achilles heel. This is the game we lost last year with the fumble, not fumble, and, you know, 5 plays in 15 seconds, and they score a touchdown to end the game. But I could just feel it in the air. There were 3 times in field goal range where Mario decided to go for it on 4th down, could have kicked field goals. If he kicks all 3 of those field goals, we win this game.
Yeah.
Like, literally, just off those points alone. Obviously, the game flow would have went a lot different. I think they have more drives that stall if we're scoring sooner.
Yeah, you start to make more mistakes when you're down. Yeah. You can't. Ryan Russillo says it all the time, but you can't simulate your back against the wall.
And then Lance Guidry's just, this guy's an ignoramus. Like,
good word, Paul.
They are not trying to throw the ball at all. Their quarterback is coming back from injury, and they are effectively just running the OG Georgia Tech triple option with, like, new variations. And in my mind, I'm like, yo, every time I've played Georgia Tech in NCAA, you run a 5-down, 2 linebackers. You get as much people crowding the line as possible so you can defend the edge. And this motherfucker just stayed having 4 people, wasn't bringing any extra pressure, and they were destroying us on the edge. Every
Cam Ward
pitch,
had a good game.
Cam Ward had a fantastic game. Every he had a fumble that ended the game, but I'm not blaming him for that because he shouldn't have been in that position. Every pitch, every fucking what's the jet sweep? I'm like, cover the edge. You're leaving the edge wide open, and they just kept fucking taking it right there. And that's how we lost the game. So yeah, but you know, one loss. Yeah, you know, still couldn't win the ACC again. By you know, everything's nothing is wrong yet. Yet that's the one you had, Mario. That was the one I penciled us in for at the beginning of the season. I said we're probably going to lose. I actually at the start of the season I said we're probably going to lose. With the team we had, we should lose at no more than 2 games, but at the very least, 1 game. And this is the one. Can't lose again, my boy.
How far did Georgia fall?
Georgia fell 9 spots to number 11 after getting beat up by Lane Kiffin.
The Lane train came to town.
Lane train came to...
Well, they came to the Lane train.
But yeah, I was about to say, I think they took the Lane train over to Oxford, and then they had to take it back to Athens after getting their ass kicked 28-8. 28-10. Sorry. Right. As far as who is up, Ole Miss up after winning that game. They go up 6 spots to number 11. Alabama goes up 2 spots after beating LSU. Notre Dame goes up 2 spots after beating Florida State. I mean, people still get bonus points for beating Florida State.
No way.
BYU goes up 2 spots after beating Utah. By the way, the thing that really pisses me off about the Miami falling, Miami has 1 loss, falls below Georgia with 2 losses. Georgia should be 12. How is Georgia ahead of Miami? This is insane. Be
more ranked teams.
Ole Miss is ahead of us. They have 2 losses. There's three teams with 2 losses ahead of a 1-loss team. Insane.
But Miami hasn't played a ranked team all year.
Louisville is now ranked.
You sandbagging son of a bitch.
I'm just saying. If that's going to be the barometer.
This is the one thing I dislike about college football. There is a lot more parity now with the transfer portal and with NIL. The thing I dislike about it is that the round table or whatever it is always changes the parameters. And they do that on purpose so no one can hold them accountable.
So, like, the thing is, like, it's a game of musical chairs. If, like, say Florida ripped off a bunch of wins at the end of the season and ended up being ranked number 25, then Miami has another ranked win. Like,
well, and they play this game where
they weren't ranked when you played. What does that even mean?
They play this fun game too, where they're like, the people will be like, oh, is it conference championships that matter? And they're like, yeah, a little bit. And they're like, is it head to head? And they're like, yeah, maybe. And it's like, oh, you just keep deferring. So that way you can put in whoever you want.
Pretty much.
Gun to your head. Do you think Oregon wins at all?
Wins it all? No.
Yeah. Nah, me neither.
No. But they are still number one. Ohio State is number two. Texas is number three. Penn State 4. Indiana 5. Tennessee 6. Tennessee is 6? How did they get back up there? BYU 7.
Beat Alabama.
I don't even think that Alabama wins means anything. But Alabama's not that good this year. BYU number 7, Notre Dame 8, Bama 9, Miss 10, Georgia 11, Miami 12.
All right.
Boise, SMU sitting on the outside looking in.
SMU will get back in.
SMU was never. SMU's not getting in unless they beat us in the ACC championship game.
SMU in the ACC championship game. I never thought I'd hear those words.
I know, right? And funny enough, two teams in the ACC championship. One that got the death penalty, one they threatened with the death penalty.
Let's go. All right. Time for everyone's favorite segment, Quick Hits.
You'd be surprised how quick.
Quick! Name it, hits
Quick Hit.
All right, time for Brennan. Quick Hits. Real quick, before we get to the Fulham thing, do you think Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to get traded? Sorry, I just thought of this. I was looking at ESPN.com and there was a bunch of shit about it.
Do I think he will get traded? If he wants to get traded, they suck right now. They're like 2-8.
They're so bad.
Yeah.
And the Cavaliers were undefeated when I checked yesterday.
Yeah, they're still undefeated, I believe. Unless they played today.
And Paolo's out for the Magic.
Yeah, they played today. Still undefeated. Loss. Yeah, Paolo's
the
out.
The Magic
Nuggets
went from
have turned
like
it around.
Yeah. Oh my God. Did you see that stat line for Jokic?
Everybody was world is falling. Oh, the Nuggets. And like, oh, guys.
He had like 37, 18, and 15.
Yeah, he had a stat line that's never been had. I hate those things. I think I've
they do
that
it.
1,000 times. But
they do that all the time in the NFL now where they're like, oh, teams who were down by 10 points with 3 or more interceptions are 187-0.
Yeah,
or
it's like, who's
0-187? And you're like, I think the analytics have gotten out of control.
But the East is interesting to look at. The number 3 team right now, the Pacers, are 500. They would be 11th in the West.
Yeah, the West is better.
But the thing is, the East, like, they have teams, like you just mentioned, Paolo's hurt. We don't know how long he's going to be out for. The Sixers and their whole Embiid, George, and now Maxey's out as well. Milwaukee's confusing because they have everybody there and they're just not good right now. So
yeah, I was really hoping that the Magic could sneak into the 2 spot, but then Paolo's out for like 6 weeks, which really means like 3 months in the NBA talk. So it's like, ah, shit.
Yeah, I never thought they would get the two spot. Three at the best. Two.
Well, I was just thinking like sneaky, like
really praying.
All of a sudden, you know, Wagner's going to start shooting again like he did his rookie year, but that's
really praying, my boy. Anyways, time for the Fulham.
Let's get to the fun. Let's get to the fun Fulham corner. It's fun this week.
It was fun last week too when I told the story about me and the homie Paul at the bar and getting the dub on Monday night. But Saturday we start. Was it Saturday?
Yeah, we played Saturday. Crystal Palace.
Saturday we went to Seahurst Park to take on Crystal Palace over there in London. There in London as well. Fun fact: Crystal Palace Stadium is where Ted Lasso was filmed. They used field to.
I started watching Ted Lasso again. I got through all three seasons in like 3 days.
Oh, damn. I know they're not long. Episodes. I was like, I know they're not long, but dang, 3 days. I got through the first two seasons in like a day and a half, probably. So
yeah,
it's not too bad.
Well, it's one of those things where you watch an episode and you're like, that was so short.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Just like, watch another. And then you look at your phone and you're like, it's 3:15 in the morning. I should go to bed.
That's funny. So we went to Crystal Palace. We went, and funny enough, Joakim Andersen, our center back, was at Crystal Palace to start this season. And he's been there for the past two seasons. Again, if you don't remember, we had him before the last time we got relegated. So we had to sell him off at that point. And now that we've stayed up, he was one of the guys that we wanted to bring back. We were able to bring him back because they were looking bad. And they are bad. They're not good. They're in relegation zone right now. But to the game itself, Emil Smith Rowe was able to get a goal right before the end of the first half. So we went into that second half with a one goal lead. We had so many opportunities to get a second one. Didn't happen. Didn't break our way. One of their players got a red card. He got pulled out. So they're down to 10 men. Around that same time, we bring in the Welsh wizard himself, Harry Wilson. And after being on the pitch for less than a minute, he gets another goal. It's insanity.
Why are they starting this guy?
There's a lot of great players on the team right now. Right now, it's an embarrassment of riches. I would say this is – it's funny because I remember earlier in the season, I was like, hey, we have the amount of depth where we can win like a Carabao Cup or an FA Cup. And then I think like the next day we got bounced out of the Carabao Cup. we lost on freaking
just
penalty kicks.
Everybody.
We lost on penalty kicks after like 11 penalty kicks. Like everybody and their mom had to kick a penalty before it finally got decided. So, but the FA Cup is right around the corner at the top of the next year. But, so, yeah, Harry got his goal. Harry almost had a second goal, but it got called back. I was going to say, Emil almost scored a second goal, but it got called back for offside. And Harry Wilson almost got a second goal, but they said incidental handball. The ball, when he corralled it, it went and hit his arm, even though he didn't, like, intentionally. But the touching of the arm in any way is going to be called a handball now. So they disallowed the goal. So we were able – what could have been a 4-0 win ended up being a 2-0 win. A couple other things and other results broke our way. So we are currently sitting at 7 in the table. And two of the clubs ahead of us right now are not like your marquee clubs. Tottenham's having a bad season. They're sitting at number 10. Man U is at number 13. West Ham, 14. Like, so right now ahead of us, two of the clubs ahead of us are Brighton, who in the last 3 years or so have been a very consistent team. They've found themselves in the top five. And Nottingham Forest, who... just 2 years ago, they were like fighting off relegation. I don't know how they've been able to turn around that club to where they're top five right now, but that's pretty impressive. And then ahead of us, you got Liverpool at number one right now because Man City has had a bunch of injuries and have lost a couple of games here and there. Lost a couple, drew a couple. Chelsea is sitting at number three, arch rivals. Arsenal's at number four, London rivals. And then, like I said, Nottingham, Brighton, and then Fulham sitting at number 7. So we're in good position. We're heading into another international break. I think we have 1 week off, and then we come back like the week right before Thanksgiving. So, yeah, things are looking good. Club is looking good. People are getting healthy. Sasha Lukic, I think, should be back after the international break. He got hurt on the previous international break playing for Serbia. So he was our center defense. Sandberg has been very good in that time. So we have more depth, more chemistry amongst players from top to bottom. So it's shaping up to be a very, very good season for us. And, you know, I think I said it earlier, and if we didn't lose a couple games, we would honestly be top five right now. But that's the difference between, you know, not making those simple mistakes. But we're in play for Europe.
There we go.
As the folks there say, get your passports ready.
As we say here, get your mind right. All right. This week we are going to do a kind of a tandem walk-off. Joe asked me a very interesting question at the start, but right before we started recording. I'll set it up for you. He's trying to be a good host, but.
So I was listening to another podcast that we won't name here, but they were talking about Caleb Williams not scoring a touchdown in like the last 20 or so drives or whatever, last two games, I want to say. And people were lamenting the fact that they're not capitalizing on the window of him being in his rookie contract. You know, they made all these pieces to get Keenan Allen there and Roma Dunze. But the offensive line isn't good. The head coach, they didn't move on from the previous year. The OC is not that spectacular. And they were bringing up the notion that you have to win in the rookie contract window. And I was driving and I was listening to this and I was saying to myself, there's only one quarterback that has really pulled that off. Brennan has, when we discussed it, right before we got on, he let me know there's one other quarterback who was able to do it. But for the most part, there's been two guys to actually pull it off. There's been a handful of guys who have gotten there, but not won the whole thing. So, Brennan.
Yeah, so Jared Goff made it to a Super Bowl, lost. The two quarterbacks we're talking about, obviously, are Patrick Mahomes, who won it in his third year. Everyone knows about that. And then Russell Wilson, actually. Yeah, second year as a starter, third year on the team. Russell Wilson actually won it in his second year with the Seattle Seahawks.
The Was it second year or third year?
Second year. I just did a bunch of research on this. The rookie wage scale was implemented by the NFL for the 2011 draft. So Ben Roethlisberger won it in his second year, but that wasn't, but they didn't have like a rookie wage scale, and it wasn't like a big deal that a rookie quarter, like it was a big deal, but it wasn't a big deal as far as the pay scale.
But I will say though, he won it in the, I think that's why I didn't consider Russ in that, because Ben and Russ won it in similar fashions where they weren't the engines.
No,
like it was a run game. It was a defense. And good coaching that really carried these young guys, shepherded these young guys there. Whereas, but
you can also say that about older guys, Trent Dilfer, Brad Johnson.
But my thing is, like, this allure of winning during the rookie contract, I think, comes with Patrick Mahomes, who was the driving force in that Super Bowl. People are thinking, like, you have to capitalize off this young guy being spectacular and winning your champ, not just like a fucking, because if that was the case, if you just needed a carrier pigeon, fucking go get Joe Flacco at 30 something. Like, why pay the money to get Deshaun Watson? If you're Cleveland, just go get Jacoby Brissett and have him shepherd your franchise.
Yeah. And I actually don't believe, I understand if you have a guy and you're like, this is the guy, I understand why you would try to operate that way. But like the problem with Caleb Williams is at the beginning of the season, everyone was like, oh, this is the best position a rookie's ever been in as far as offensive weapons. I guess they forgot about the offensive line needing to be there too. And also,
I think we tricked ourselves with the Joe Burrow, chase over Sewell.
Yeah, and I mean, they're always getting off the slow starts. Maybe that has something to do with it. There's a lot of good wide receivers. But
is it windy there? Are you in Chicago? What the hell is going on? You got a ghost.
I have my window open to get a little airflow, and my curtains are kind of freaking out. But so this is the thing. The NFL is very hard, and I quoted a movie I don't normally quote in 300 earlier. I will quote The Replacements right now just for Kyle. Your teammates lean on you and you crumble. You got to figure out who these people are. Like, that's important. And we see it all the time. We see it with Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold to a lesser extent, Jared Goff even. Like, we've seen this before. I see this all the time. When linebackers get drafted, N'Kobe Dean was like my guy coming out of the draft, fell to the third round, was injured, couldn't get on the field, and now is playing out of his mind. And it's his third year. Like, it takes time for these high IQ positions like linebacker, like quarterback. It takes time to figure it out. This idea of what you're saying, I think, is the general point is, like, we have a rookie quarterback. He was projected to be the guy. So now we just have to build around him as if he is the guy is not correct, because most of the time they're not the guy. In fact, 66.6% of the time they're not the guy.
And my thing is not necessarily that they're not the guy. My thing is they haven't seen enough NFL football to become the guy. Like, Peyton Manning didn't win a Super Bowl until, like, his eighth, ninth year. Like, it took a while.
We thought C.J. Stroud was going to be the new test case for this, because he came in, he didn't throw a pick through, like, the first seven games. We're like, oh, this is the guy. They only have to, like, they're set at quarterback. And then teams watch game film, and all of a sudden this year, he looks mortal. And it's like, oh, yeah, the players on defense get paid too, dude. Like,
and I think, like, Josh Allen, like, people... Like, now that Josh Allen is on his big boy contract, we'll call it, people are like, oh, they missed the window. And it's like, no, they didn't. The window is the quarterback's career. The window isn't trying to get it while he's paid the minimal.
Because if he is the guy, if he is who we thought we were, RIP Romeo Crennel, then it doesn't matter. And Josh Allen is proving that. Lamar Jackson has proven that to the extent he's never won a Super Bowl, but he's won multiple MVPs with guys that, like,
I think Patrick distorted the math. Like, he's made it harder for your Lamar's, your Josh Allen's, your Jalen Hurts, your Joe Burrow's, like, everybody is being compared to Michael Jordan. So if you're Charles Barkley and you have a Hall of Fame career, people are like, ah, but you're not Michael.
The other problem, too, is that winning a Super Bowl is very difficult.
It takes 53 people. One guy is not going to be the thing.
And we see this all the time. Look at the Jets. They thought, oh, we'll get MVP Aaron Rodgers in here. He just won an MVP like 3 or 4 years ago. And then they're a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, you have people like Trent Dilfer, who's openly said on air, like, I won that Super Bowl because I was a great game manager and we had a stellar defense. Like, it just depends on how the chips fall. And we've seen this time and again. Brock Purdy, everyone's like, well, he's so good. That's why they have all these weapons. They still can't get out of their own way sometimes.
And I think the conclusion I came to, because I was listening to this in the car with the lady, and I mean, I was talking it through with her, and it was actually a really good conversation. She really doesn't give a damn about football, but she was just interested in the construction of the team aspect of it. And I was like, I think you need a quarterback. You need an older quarterback who is going to raise the ceiling on your team, because the theory is you want to win during the rookie window, because that's when you can have the best pieces around your guy, because he's getting paid the least.
Well, the most expensive pieces, yeah.
Yeah. And I think if you're relying on that, there's too many variables on the expensive pieces. I think actually your quarterback needs to be the most expensive piece. I think the only true testament is your quarterback being the most expensive piece, and can he raise all these other pieces up with him?
Like, it's about raising the ceiling.
I think it's winning when your star receiver's on his rookie deal.
not your quarterback on his rookie deal. I think it's trying to find the linebacker, the DN, the D tackle on their rookie deal and not the quarterback. I think the quarterback should be capable and good enough to be on his second deal. And now he's seen enough football and downloaded enough stuff to where nothing's really going to phase him and he can help people get to where they need to get to. And it takes coaching and it takes GMing.
Yeah. And I mean, we've seen it. Like, we've seen it time and again where I've seen it in Jacksonville where people were like, Trevor's the guy. He has to be the guy. And then you go and invest in these, you know, you pay too much money at the time, a lot of people said, for Christian Kirk.
You go and get these
older linemen because you're like, oh, they're like Pro Bowlers. It was like, yeah, that was 7 years ago, man. Like, what are we talking about?
You just made me think of something. You know what the Jaguars should have been doing? You draft Trevor. We're not going to win with Trevor in the first 5 years. Let's just eat that. Let's not go pay Christian Kirk. Let's invest everything we can into the offensive line.
Yeah.
So by the time we draft Brian Thomas Jr., we're ready. Because now should be your window.
Yeah, and I've been saying that the whole time. And like, it's so frustrating because now you have this star player who's very good. And it's like, yeah, but we're through the looking glass now. Now we're going to have to tear it all down. And by the time the team will be ready, Trevor is going to be on his next contract.
Yeah.
And it's not even his rookie. Like, you pay him whatever you got to pay him. And I'm a big believer, like Joe is, about paying them early. Because if you think you got the guy, you got to pay him now. Because the longer you wait, the more expensive it gets. But, like, it's incredibly frustrating because then you see these teams where, like, Matthew Stafford is probably, I think, one of the best examples of this. When the Detroit Lions had Matthew Stafford, even if they were terrible, you were like, the Detroit Lions could make some noise, at least getting to the playoffs, because they have one of the best quarterbacks. He did it with the Rams. Their entire offensive line was decimated. They were still winning games this year. Like, you need someone who can elevate your team, and you don't know who that person is until their second contract.
Until their second contract, they're not going to be looked upon to be a floor raiser.
Yeah.
And I think GMs are fooling themselves by hoping that people turn into that. Like, there's no reason that Daniel Jones should still be the quarterback of the Giants.
Yeah.
They should have moved on from him. They should have moved on from him. What, I think he's in his third year of his deal now, the last year, or second to last year, maybe. They should have moved on from him, kept Saquon, built that offensive line. And they should have had Jaden Daniels this year you're not going to have Malik Nabers, obviously, but you would have had him raising the floor on these other not good receivers with Daniel Jones. They would look a lot better with him. The same way the Commanders, no one cared about any receiver they had except Terry McLaurin.
He was a cast off.
Terry McLaurin was a man on an island. It's like, man, it would be really good if he had a quarterback to get him the ball. And now it's like, oh, yeah, he looks good again.
DeAndre Hopkins, this was an interesting stat, has caught touchdowns from like 14 different quarterbacks. But now he's on a team with a floor raiser, and he looks like the DeAndre Hopkins of old.
Yeah.
The NFL is hard, and and there's so many times, there's so many circumstances where GMs will come out and be like, oh, I thought we should have taken Patrick Mahomes. It's like, shut up. Mm-hmm. If you thought that, you would have taken him. Like, we see it all the time. Mitch Trubisky, Chosen Rosen. Like, we see this everywhere where you get a guy and you're like, this is the guy. We're taking him early. And they don't work out. And that's okay. The NFL is hard. Just like Joe said, cut your losses and reset. Stop trying to force it.
I was saying, it's also just like, one, there's no one way to do this. So I think everybody trying to find the guy and then, like, hope it happens. Like, honestly, Detroit probably did the smartest thing, and they lucked into effectively having Jared Goff on a second rookie deal to some degree. Like, when they made that trade, it was like, all right, we're going to draft all the pieces, and then we'll go find the guy to then like have these pieces carry him. And then it's like, oh, well, Jared's kind of like, he's holding water.
Yeah. But I think the greatest example of this is Harbaugh in Baltimore. They get, and this is why Doug Peterson got fired in Philadelphia. They get a quarterback, and then the team collectively says, we have to change the system for this quarterback. Now, there are some coaches who go, no, I'm not changing my system. I don't like this quarterback. And then they eventually are out. And then there are some teams, like what Harbaugh did, where they overhaul. You go from a 6'4", pocket-passing, giant white guy in Joe Flacco. And go Blue Hens. And then change your entire identity because you drafted this quarterback in the second round, and now he's won two MVPs. Some would argue he's about to win a third.
That, again, knowing when to cut your losses, that they didn't start until like week 10 of that season when it looked like this is going to be the end of Harbaugh. Like,
exactly.
They're not going to get to the playoffs. Harbaugh, you know, he's been there for a decade plus now.
Flacco's out, yeah.
It looked like it's over, turned the page, and then they install Lamar, they get to the playoffs. And it's like, oh, wow, look at that.
It's just, there's so much ego involved in this. And honestly,
I still contend that Doug Peterson did the right thing by taking out Jalen and putting in Nate Sudfeld and going and get a better draft pick. I still believe he did the right thing. A lot of people are going to kill me for that.
It's interesting to me because the egos involved are crazy. Like, Doug is in a position where he's about to get fired again for refusing to change.
Yeah.
And it's like, they just, a lot of coaches won't learn from their mistake. Now, there are some coaches like Raheem Morris is a good example where he was just too young when he got that Atlanta job, and everybody knew that. And then he left Buccaneers and learned from job. That and. I'm sorry. Yeah. The Buccaneers job. He left and he learned from that. Now he's playing, you know, he's coaching with the Falcons and they look pretty good this year. They're probably going to win the NFC South. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the Belichicks, the Doug Petersons, the Jack Del Rios, these coaches who are like, this is the system that we run.
Not Jack Del Rio.
Yeah. I saw what just happened. But they're like, this is the system that we run. And this is the system, the Tom Coughlins, this is what we're going to run. And it's like, that's not how you play with the cards you're dealt.
Yeah. I wouldn't include Belichick in that. I feel like Belichick was probably the most flexible coach out there.
Well, I'm just saying that to the point where, like, they went through so much turmoil.
Now, to the end,
Brady was out.
I was like, to the end, he got kind of stubborn. But
yeah,
if you think of those Brady years, that offense year to year never looked the same.
No, you're right about that. But also, I just think this whole idea of, like, I'm going to run. Like, he made terrible draft picks like 7 years in a row.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what are you doing, man?
He made terrible first-round draft picks.
Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah, those white guys he took late, man, they really flourished.
Kyle Van Noy's still in the league. Not white, but Kyle Van Noy's still in the league.
You know what I'm saying? But it is, I completely agree, I think, with you in the sense that it's like, you don't know you have the guy until you have the guy, and that's gonna, it costs money, but so do a lot of cool things in life. Like, it gets expensive, but if you want to have a winning team, it's expensive.
Yeah, my thing is, like, there's no one way to you know, screw in a light bulb. There is one way to screw in a light bulb. You screw it. There's not only one way to do a Rubik's Cube. Yes, you can look up and Google the Rubik's Cube hack, but you can also just stumble into it, all right? Sometimes you can't be trying to pinpoint, this is going to be the guy who's going to take us to the next level, but we got to make sure we do it in this time frame. It's like, you got to have some foresight. It's funny. These are all, like, most owners are business people, and they understand when you buy a business or start a business, like, hey, if we're starting a restaurant, for the first 3 years, we're going to be losing money. And then the fourth year, hopefully we break even. And then from then on, we're good. That's what a quarterback is. In the first 3 years, he's going to be figuring it out. In the fourth year, you know, he might break even. And then from then on, you're golden.
Yeah, I completely agree. This is a good talk.
And we'll bring you the press conference in its entirety.
You guys thought we were going to get out early, and then we snuck in that walk-off. Joe, yeah. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. Well, I don't know if you can find me on Twitter that much anymore. But my handles on Twitter and Instagram are at Joe Dorville. That's Twitter and Instagram, at Joe Dorville. You can check out this show's Twitter and Instagram, at Cheering Press. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Anulo Network. That's Anulo. That is Who Does a Podcast. Don't forget to check out my merch under Etsy.com/shop/headphone Joe, no E. And don't forget to check out my music on all DSPs under Headphone Joe, no E. In the phone specifically, folks. Meant to say that. No E in the phone. Brennan.
At Brennan T. Comedy on all social media, BrennanTComedy.com. I got a show here in Queens, New York. If you're going to be in the Astoria area next Wednesday, Brennan and the Broken Toys, Wednesday, November 20th at Grove 34 at 7 o'clock. Tickets on sale now all over the place. And check out my other podcast, Ex Drinking Buddy. I have a guest on every week to talk about their best and worst drinking, drug, party, and getting in trouble stories. Just had a really big comic, close to 1 million followers on Instagram, reach out to me and ask to come on the show. So we'll be recording that on Wednesday or Thursday. All right. That's it, right?
That is it. Brennan, get us out of here so we can go back to our miserable lives.
And that's why we play the game.
Hello.
I didn't look up a shout out for this week. We got anybody?
I need to hit the button. I'm bugging. Huge shout out, Ricky Pearsall. Great game after getting shot.
Yeah.
Pearsall?
It got Pearsall? Shot.
Pearsall.
Shout out to Moss. Cooper DeJean, you're not shout the only one.
Shout out to Coop, man. Corner, dog. Big Coop. Queen Y'all Mitchell. Rodrigo Blankenship. I used to Quinion in the middle of that. It was all white guys.